The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Man in Line today is with Douglas Central MHK, Chris Thomas, two-time Minister for Policy and Reform and Infrastructure. Now, a backbencher, and probably fair to say, Chris Thomas is vocal on many things, so he's going to be vocal to you today between now and one. If you want to talk to Chris Thomas, by all means, raise anything you want. Text, email, call and WhatsApp. Call 66 13 68. Text 166177, email studio at manxradio.com. Chris, Faster Mike, good afternoon.
Faster Mike, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
No, good to see you today. And so at the moment, as I mean, it's been a while since you were a minister. How's life on the backbenches?
Well, we're all there to represent the people and to make sure the policies going forward are the right policies for the island, for everybody who lives on the island, the people who come to the, back to the island in the future. We're in a pretty bad way these days. There's lack of trust in government, in public service delivery more generally, and I have been able to contribute more from outside government than inside government. Most recently, I was asked to stand down from being a member of the Department of Health and Social Care. Before that, I was asked to stand down from being Minister of Infrastructure, supposedly to speed up reform, reform that never happened. It slowed down or was cancelled. In actual fact, that was about the gas issue. So, you know, basically, I'm not in a... And where we are now is I've been an MHK for 12 years. I've actually been a minister for fewer than five years. So I've and the 2026 general election is absolutely vital. And I'm looking forward today to talking about some crucial issues. Yeah. So that we have the 2026 election as a chance for the public to make their views known in an informed, informed by the facts, so that they have costed choices about some very important issues for all of our future. That's what elections are all about. It's not about nice people getting elected. It's about making sure we have the right information on the table as we make up our minds how we vote and we have a better government next time.
You mentioned a lack of trust. I mean, is that perceived or is it real?
No, it's real. It's real. You would be... I know you wouldn't be surprised, actually, but some people would be surprised how many people around the middle of Douglas, where I represent and you live, who would say to you that really, Chris, this time government has lost it. I mean, over the last 10 years, we've been unhappy with some of the choices made and decisions made, but government's really lost it now. You know, you sort of owe it to us to make sure that policy is on the table, costed policy with options and choices, so that we have a really good general election and a really good government that's formed after the general election.
It's fair to say you're never backward in coming forward talking to the voters. You believe in speaking to people all the time, don't you?
I do speak to people all the time, yeah, and I do try to help people by email. I'm not as active as I once was on places like Facebook or Twitter, because I think that people like me, you know, senior members of the House of Keys, because although I've been there 12 years, which doesn't seem like a great length of time compared to some of the MHKs of the past, It does actually make me the longest serving member of the House of Keys who's not speaker or a minister. And so therefore, I think it's my duty to work with others to make sure we ally for policy. And we've got the election coming up very soon now, and we need to make sure we write down what the choices are for energy, what the choices are for housing, what the choices are for healthcare. And transport is the thing that we're going to talk about today, I understand, from your billing.
Oh, yeah, there are plenty to talk about. But first, let's go to the phones. And we'll speak to Stephen, who's with us now. Hi, Stephen. Just put the headphones on there, Chris. That's it. And yeah, Stephen. Hi, Stephen. You're live with Chris Thomas.
Hello, Stephen. Hi, Andy. Hi, Chris. And good afternoon, listeners. It was. I think there's a lot of important issues at the moment. One, which of course is still exercising the minds of residents of Douglas Central, the West Norland Village development. And I wanted to know your thoughts, but I'll just explain the things that I'm concerned over. is that the first phase, but there's two phases to this central development. The first phase, we were told that it was going to be for essential workers and returning students who may not have accommodation, and that was going to be for returning students and essential workers. And everybody that I spoke to in this constituency thought that was an excellent idea. And as recently as the 16th of March 2024, there was a report on Manx Radio that Minister Crucial had said there would be definitely no parking permits issued for residents of that area, and then it seems to have been changed by the new minister. Then we had the first announcement that these properties would not be sold, and now it seems to have been changed again, and there's the possibility that the site will be changed or will be sold. The properties are not going to be for essential workers, and yet that's contrary to what I've been told by a certain a senior retired person who told me that they were having problems within some departments and education and schools, who said they couldn't get people because there's no accommodation. So it seems that there's no consistency from government, and there's no consistency from the NDC in what they've been telling planning and telling the residents of the area. So I wonder, Chris, could you give us your oversight of what you think should happen and what's the issues? Oh, that's my first point.
Well, all those points are one and concerns are the ones I share, and I put in an additional one as well alongside the parking issue, because we were promised no parking permits. The fact that we were promised this was for key workers, and now it's for anybody who can take up their 12-month lease, renewable lease, who's got the demonstration of the funds in the bank, as far as I can tell. And thirdly, this was in somehow going to be linked to a transport change more generally, so it would be about active travel and changing bus routes and the like. The extra point I want to add in is, at the meeting you and I organised with Manx Development Corporation in Finch Hill Bowling Club and Snooker Club, we were told categorically by a former DHSC officer, and nobody from MDC disagreed, that the lifespan of the building was 25 years in 2016, when the building was replaced by new hospital medical professional accommodation up on the hospital site, a building constructed for 40, I think nearly 50 people, at £2.2 million, much cheaper than what's been spent. We were told it was less than 25 years then, and last week I was told they now expect the building to last for 50 years, which surprises me, and I will be following that up. So I share all of your concerns. I've got a motion next Tuesday that it does seem to be worrying people inside government. I've had a discussion this week about that motion with people from government, but Newsroom have got me for an interview immediately after this one, and I'll be making a statement about my motion to the news team, along the lines of, it might be that I can't move it in June, I might have to move it to July, but it's a very important motion, because it's not only the public who don't know, it's also Tim Wald who don't know what's really going on. But it seems to me that housing policy, planning policy and travel policy is fundamentally being determined by a few ministers and the Manx Development Corporation, and the place for policy to be determined is in the House of Keys and Tim Wald.
Stephen?
Yes, I would wholeheartedly agree with that. Sometimes I don't necessarily agree with the decisions that Tim Wald makes, but at least it's Tim Wald that has made the decision, and I think that's the right and proper place to have these debates, not outside, not in committees. It's within, not in briefings. It's essential that every MHK who's there as a constituency MHK first and foremost does have these debates to make sure all the things are included. The things that they do not want to hear are in the debate, and I think that's the right and proper way to do it. The second point I'd like to make, Chris, is, if I may, is that the big policy issues and the problems that are looming, and I wonder, is there going to be big problems in, for the next administration? And I'll just illustrate some. We've heard recently that there's a lot of various companies in various industries closing and reducing their exposure on the island. Gaming is one of them. Now we've heard that there's another shipping company that is going to leave the island or certainly reduce its footprint. And I just wonder, does Council of Ministers, or even will it be debated by MHKs, about two things? How do we have an exit strategy? Do we ask these companies why they're leaving? What's the problem? Because they said it was local issues, certainly for the shipping company that left. So we need to know what's the problem. And secondly to that is it seems to be it must be in the water in Ramsey, where the MHKs up there seem to think the best plan to solve some of our problems is to have levies on the taxpayer, and I think that's not the right way forward. And the last point I'd like to make to you is that I believe that redundancy pay on the island is less than what UK redundancy pay is, and if we are going to in a situation of people losing their jobs, we want to make sure that they get compensated for that. So I wonder if you could make some comments on what I've just said.
Again, I agree. So redundancy payments are about half what they are in both of our neighbouring islands. And as I understand it, Department for Enterprise has already consulted about adjusting that, but obviously it takes money. So that goes back to the next point you make, which is our public finances are fragile. However much you pretend we're doing well in terms of public finances, we're not doing as well as some of our competitors. So, for instance, you know, Jersey has £4 billion of free reserves. We have a quarter to an eighth of that, depending on how you look at it. And so therefore, there are now clearly two types of politicians. There are those who believe in big government, big ambitions with public expenditure, consequently big tax rises. And then there are others in my camp who think, no, we've got to be more realistic and more open and take people with us to make choices. And then coming back to the third point, I do think the reason why there's distrust, disappointment around the places I represent is because our economy has structural issues now, as well as our public finances, and we need a new economic strategy. That's what I said in Tim Wood when we debated the economic strategy most recently, and it's true in all sorts of ways. It's my duty and the duty of my colleagues to lay down clear explanations of what we believe is happening and costed choices for what can happen in the future, because so many people's lives are now affected by where we are in terms of our public finances and economy, and we can't just talk about visions and the like. We need practical, costed alternatives.
Okay, all right. Stephen, thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers. Now, 19 minutes past 12. We talked about transport just now, Chris Thomas, and obviously the buses have been exciting some comment recently, particularly the one that stuck out was the disappearance of the iconic route to Craigneish, but also in general the situation with the buses. How do you see things on public transport?
Well, we have an excellent public transport system compared to some other places, but we might need a better one. If we do need a better one, we need to be honest and say that that involves more public subsidy. So the simple facts are, we have 5 million of ticket sales, we have 12 million of expenses. So the public funds basically cover the gap, £7 million. Do we have enough data about how people use them? We have more data than I think people got the impression when the minister most recently answered this question, because we have data about where people get on. We have data about how many go-cards are used. We don't have data about where people get off, and we don't have data about exactly how people use their go-cards. So, you know, we've got to make choices about continuing expansion or basically maintenance of the bus routes. Craigneish was a particular issue because the service didn't seem to be used a great deal, but it's very important. It's iconic, as you described it. I did notice that the RTLC actually commented on that route in its most recent regulatory notice, because that route is part of the routes around the west of the island from between Peel and the Sound. And where we are in buses is the Road Transport Licensing Committee licenses a route, has to authorise changes to the route. That doesn't mean that the route will be delivered, but you have to have that licence before you can do it. And I did notice that there were some changes, so perhaps we can expect some announcements from the minister or the department, or perhaps it was an error on the announcement and I might have misinterpreted it anyhow, but that's something for you to follow up on the Sound route.
But also the fact that, I mean, active travel is there in the background. It's a policy goal to improve active travel. You mentioned Jersey in terms of reserves. Obviously, I mean, it's nothing to do with the travel, as it were, but Jersey's tiny. So in Jersey, you can walk everywhere. It's not practical to walk, miles and miles on the Isle of Man, particularly late at night. And going back to public transport, if it is £7 million, as it were, to the wrong side of the balance sheet, that's normal. Public transport does require a subsidy, doesn't it? I mean, it is a public service.
I agree. But if people get carried away and start talking about free public buses, no ticket price, that's an extra £5 million, yeah, which has got to be justified. And also, we have to remember, when I started politics, we did have free school transport, which is something that comes up earlier than free public transport in general. But in those days, we had 20 extra big buses, double-deckers, yeah, and the like, and the people complained that there were all these big buses driving around, which we needed for school journeys, but the rest of the day they were driving around, yeah, practically empty in the countryside. So we need to make sure we have the right bus service. Yet again, the transport strategy and the bus strategy has been put off. It's been promised for years now, and we made lots of progress in the year when I was minister. Very disappointed, to be fair, the last government left a bus strategy behind. Very disappointed that we haven't as yet had the transport strategy, even though it's long overdue.
Okay, Julian, you're live with Chris Thomas. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Ian. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Julian. How are you? Thanks for phoning.
All right, good. Yeah, good. Good to hear your voice. I've got two related questions for you, Chris, so I'll get quick to this. The first relates to the £400,000 20-mile-per-hour zone rollout. In your opinion, is the DOI Minister, Michelle Hayward, following due process, especially considering the recent statement by the Chief Constable saying he doesn't believe it will have any impact on safety, and the installation of signage before the consultation has been completed? And my second question is, Michelle Hayward again, private members bill that she's put forward, the Safe Access Zones and Protected Public Places Bill. Who exactly are the 7 protected services aimed at? Why is this bill potentially unlimited in scope in terms of size, coverage and time, the time limits on it? And do you believe that it's infringing on our freedoms?
So in terms of the private members bill, I basically agree your points, and I voted against it at second reading. There were 3 or 4 of us who did. So I'm delighted that the public noticed thereafter, and the issues are now more public. And Mr. Murcott, for instance, yourself, have been majoring on presenting some concerns. I don't know what the 7 protected services are, and that's shocking to me. To go back to 20-mile-per-hour zones, there's due legal process and there's due political process. I'm absolutely sure that due political process has not been followed. I think Mrs. Corlett, in part, was duped during the debate by the Minister of Infrastructure. I had a better amendment that Mrs. Corlett could have seconded during the Tim Wood debate, so that we had to have a report back to Tim Wood before implementation started. In the end, I trusted the minister and the department to consult in good faith, and then to sort of report back without it being explicit in the Tin Wood resolution. So political process definitely hasn't been followed. I was worried about the first order in terms of legal process. I'm still worried about the Chief Constable's expressed opinion, the fact that the enforcement's been announced to be not in place. So, but that's the margins of law and policy. I'm minded to move on on the 24th of June in the House of Keys to call on the Chief Minister to go in and have a look at all of the documents and policies and decisions that are being made around this, because I do think the Chief Minister, having been a former DOI minister for a brief period, needs to pay the public of whom he leads the government the respect of actually going in and checking what's going on in the Department of Infrastructure. And the Chief Minister has got the powers to do that, and I think I'll be calling for that on the 24th of June.
Julian?
Yeah, I mean, everyone can agree that, 20 mile an hour zones around schools and in housing estates and things. And, you know, there's quite a lot of schools now have got the dynamic one, which I think is really sensible, where when the flashing lights are going, it's a 20, and when they're off, it's a 30. I don't think anybody's got a problem with that. But you did vote for it on the 17th of December. Would you say now that in its current form, if it goes for a further vote, you would vote against it in its current form, unless it's heavily amended to be actually sensible? And, things like, you can imagine driving at 20 miles an hour down Woodbourne Road or Colby or Main Road Port Erin or any of the distributor roads through Onken. Absolutely. I think it's going to cause so much impatience, you're probably going to end up with dangerous overtaking, because if anyone tried to do 20 at the moment through any of those distributor roads, you're going to have people up your boot. It's going to be, even that is dangerous because you haven't got the stopping distances. So you're, you think you'd change your...
No, well, yep. your understanding of my vote is actually wrong. I mean, I hope I say that in a very respectful way. But you're actually you're putting Minister Hayward's argument for her, because the vote of which only four people were against wasn't about 20 mile per hour introduction as a default. The vote was about the process to get there. And as I said, the most important thing was we trusted at that point that the Minister of Infrastructure would change her ways and would do this properly, and she hasn't done that properly since. So therefore, I'll definitely be doing what I said to make sure that the Chief Minister knows that if the Council Ministers support the process as it's being carried out now, the public will lose further trust in government overall. Basically, the vote wasn't about do you support 20 mile per hour or not. The vote was about do we need some 20 mile per hour zones. So, for instance, residential areas is not defined in Manx law, and it's still ambiguous what it is. Distributor roads is mentioned in the Manx manual for highways, but it's not clear what they are. And, at home, it would be very frustrating for us with a wheelchair accessible vehicle to keep it going, because it's a diesel vehicle. And if we were to driving all the way along Woodburn Road, Victoria Road every day backwards and forwards, it would ruin our filters and the like. It's not reasonable to me to expect all of those roads, which are clearly important roads and the 30 mile per hour roads. The police don't believe in it because they haven't got the resources, and the Isle of Man doesn't want electronic resources and digital resources. So therefore, we need these to be self-enforcing, and they won't be on many of the roads. So basically, we're still in the position that we need to define residential roads. We need to apply the law properly, because I still think I'm dubious about the way that the department is in seeing the 1985 Act in practice, because, for instance, you can double the fines if you're in a school zone. Residential areas, it doesn't include some of the villages around the Isle of Man, but they talk about a default residential zone. Well, we still use the 1916 legislation for local governments to define where that part of the Act can be used, and I doubt that they've interpreted it correctly, and I think somebody could win a case. So thank you for your campaigning. This is a very important issue, and the way it's been played is it's harmed the reputation of public servants and politicians, and I blame for that confusion about Mrs. Corlett's motion, which has been exaggerated by the minister just acting recklessly.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Julian.
Very quickly. Do you think that it's possible that they're trying to bypass the policing of these 20 mile an hour zones by widespread rollout of ANPR cameras across all the towns and villages? So they literally, it'll be, you get done, you get a fine through the post, and the policing is bypassed. Is that a reasonable idea, that may be what the root of this?
The primary law was changed 4 or 5 years ago to allow that sort of approach to enforcement. So, you know, you can have traffic lights that determine how long you are between one traffic light and the next light to see what speed you were doing. You can have automatic AMPR under primary law. But so far, that law's only been turned on for border control. That border control comes from the same road traffic legislation. And so it could be switched on. I haven't seen, I mean, they've constantly denied it when I've asked some questions. I haven't seen evidence that there's a plan to bring that approach in. But to me, you know, the public will then start demanding enforcement, and the police would then say, we do it on a risk-based approach with people. If you want it seriously around towns, you're going to have to go to some sort of, you know, making all of the traffic lights up in along Woodburn Road, recording when you were at the last one and working against you in terms of switching on and off first. The technology's there to do all of that, but I don't think that's the plan. But I really hope it's not the plan, because it's contrary completely to what I stand for in terms of human rights.
Good to hear from you. Thanks, Julian. A note in from this is from Josh, who just said, listening to what Chris Thomas has been saying, the thing about the 20 mile per hour, this sounds a bit sneaky. Now, that's his word. It sounds a bit sneaky. It sounds a bit backdoor. So would the public be right in perceiving it thus?
Yeah, I do think it's sneaky, but the public has started blaming some unknown civil servant campaign. I don't think it's that. I think certain politicians go in and are brutal with public servants, and public servants get very frustrated because they're buffered from one political view from one minister to a completely different political view from another minister, and it must be so frustrating. Basically, public servants like clear political direction, and the reason the Isle of Man system is failing is because we don't have clear government policies. We have fudge governments after elections formed based on strong personalities and the like. And you know, this might end up like your questioner suggests, in which point it will have been sneaky. But I really hope that the Chief Minister intervenes, and we're absolutely sure that Tim Wood and the public representatives are in charge of what happens next, not one minister.
Okay, we're with Chris Thomas, MHK, live on Man in Line today. Call, text, email, and WhatsApp. We've got a pile of questions to get to.
Hi, Liz. I see you've had your garage converted.
We're desperate for more room.
Yes. Come through and have a look. John called Manx Property Conversions. We now have an extra bedroom, but it could be another reception room, kids' playroom or office. They also did our conservatory roof last year. We were so impressed, we got them back to convert the garage.
Wow, I need that. What's their number again?
Call MPC on 450500. That's 450500. Or find them on Facebook at Manx Property Conversions.
Spectrum Windows. If your house needs a new look and your windows let in rain, keep those cold breezes out and make it look like new again. Spectrum Windows, quality through and through, great work guaranteed to you. Spectrum Windows, Spectrum Windows.
It's hot, it's here. It's the Lifestyle Furniture Summer Sale. Enjoy sensational special offers throughout our stunning showroom. Save on our most beautiful beds, sumptuous sofas, living and dining furniture, and so much more. Plus, there's 20% off art and accessories. And don't forget to visit our brand new garden furniture marquee for truly great outdoors. The Lifestyle Furniture Summer Sale. Now on at Snugborough Trading Estate, Union Mills. It's everything your home's been waiting for.
Bigger jackpots, more prizes, more chances to win. There's never been a better time to play the Hospice Lottery. We've now doubled the number of guaranteed monthly cash prizes to over 100, which means you now have the best ever odds for winning prizes. Plus, our monthly rollover jackpots build up to an incredible £10,000. Tickets are just £5, so don't miss out and help a great local cause too. Visit hospice.org.in now. Players must be over 16. Terms and conditions apply.
To celebrate Father's Day on Sunday, this weekend on Manx Radio, we're giving you the chance to win with Tinwald Mills. Up for grabs, we have a £50 gift voucher and lunch for two at the Neb Cafe. To win, listen out right across the weekend for our special dad-themed question. As soon as you hear it, text your answer to 166177 and make sure you're listening on Monday afternoon to find out if you're the lucky winner. Tinwald Mills is the perfect destination for gifts, with everything from stylish furnishings and clothing to home swimwear, dog grooming and a cosy cafe. Celebrate Father's Day this weekend with Timewald Mills and Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Chris Thomas, MHK. Here's a quick one. This is from Bruno. Oh, Bruno. Hello, Bruno. Just to say, I remember Chris Thomas talking about Kroger. Just the quick question then. Was Kroger a pot of gold for the Isle of Man? If it was, why did we throw it away? Or was it not a pot of gold?
I think the people who spoke for Kroger in the last 3 or 4 years, and indeed what I term old Kroger before that, made the case to the Manx people well and successfully that we have a potential gold, we have a potential gas field that's worth exploiting. I think they made that case really clearly. Unfortunately, it turned out that Kroger weren't able to deliver that themselves. So I do think now we've got to look for alternatives to... in terms of hydrocarbons. Basically, Timwell policy is no new fields, but that's an existing field that's been licensed once, so there's no reason why it can't be licensed again. Old Kroger failed because they couldn't raise money from the investors they approached to do the investigations and the drilling. New Kroger failed because they tried to take us back to the 20th century to approach this, and that wasn't going to work in the 21st century, 25 years into it.
OK, Juan. Hi, Juan. You're live with Chris Thomas.
Thanks, Andy. Good afternoon, Chris. How are you?
Fine, thanks. And you? Thanks for phoning.
Very good. Very good. Chris, yeah, I agree with your sentiments before on trust of the government at the moment. I think that has been growing over the last 4 years. We've got to the stage now where I think people are they're not confident in how government is managing their finances and their money and taxpayers' money and the overspend on every project. I just wanted to go on to a question. It ties into quite a few different things, including Kroger. The recent political decisions in England and the elections there, I noticed recently that one of the new candidates who's gone into council there is probably up for suspension, he says, for refusing DEI and net zero training. My question would be to you, are we getting pressure from external sources regarding this in the Isle of Man? Because the politicians seem to be doing things not for the good of the people and the island, but generally for an ESG, DEI and net zero agenda. So is there external pressure getting put on politicians and maybe civil servants to follow this rather than doing what's best for the island?
As an excellent communicator, I'd even go so far as to call you an influencer, Joe, and I just want to agree with you that perhaps we won't call it the Kroger or Kroger gas field in the future. We'll call it the Isle of Man National Gas Field, because Kroger's now history, as far as I know. They've lost the licence. We still have the gas field that can be exploited by somebody else in the future. So I think it's quite important for all of us to remember this is a gas field, potential hydrocarbon resource with a number and a name as the Isle of Man gas field. It's not Kroger's gas right. field. The second point is, yeah, you do make the point that Isle of Man politicians and civil servants work within international frameworks. We have the right not to join in with them to an extent, but if we try and go too far away from them, we might have pressure put on us from the UK. So, for instance, an example of that would be when Manx Radio, back in the 60s, was... with political support, was going to go beyond what the UK could get away with in terms of the broadcasting arrangements in Luxembourg. Another example of that would be to do with exploiting our hydrocarbon resource. We've voluntarily gone in to the Paris framework, and we have choices to make once we're inside that, but if we didn't make some choices, it would put the UK in an embarrassing position. So there are hard constraints. I have in mind health and safety, I have in mind water pollution, because at the end of the day we're an island in the middle of the Irish Sea, and the water is the same water as around Ireland and the other island across. So I don't see the sinister influence on officers. I do see that we bring over too many UK officers. I've said that now in public a number of times. We need to focus on making sure that you can have a good career in the Isle of Man's public service. Since I said that in House of Keys, three of the four external sea chief officers who came to the island are no longer going to be in post in a couple of months' time. We're just left with one of the four who came over at the end of 2023, I think it was. And I do think we've got to go back to the golden days in so many ways of the 80s and 90s, when local people could have great business careers, could have great personal careers, and could have great careers in the public service. And I don't think we have to have massive, a bit excessive respect for people coming from across.
Okay, final word, Ewan.
Yeah, I agree with that. Thank you for the new job title as well, Chris. I'll put that on my CV. I agree with you. We should be encouraging people to come back to the island and maybe our resources of helping them with their education on a proviso that they come back and they get good jobs here. I totally agree. We're bringing people in from far, far afield when we have our own good people here. In fact, I think your own son is going down the legal route, isn't he? And hopefully he'll come back and be part of the AG's office. But going forward in the future, what would be your changes for Comyn? There obviously seems to be like an inner sanctum there, should we say. How would you envisage changing that to bring Tynwald more in line with what's going on and rather than a closed shop?
Okay, that's interesting, because I've got another question from somebody saying that if the Comyn has the block vote, surely Michelle Haywood's policy will go through. Same thing.
Yeah, and so therefore that's why I've talked about on 24th of June and putting pressure on the Council of Ministers collectively and the Chief Minister particularly to make sure that they want to really stand behind what's going on over this summer in terms of 20 mile per hour zones. What do I see? Well, I think Sir Miles Walker said something incredibly important to the Constitution and Legal Affairs Committee back in the earlier part of the year when he gave them evidence. He said that what motivated him back in the day was that far too many politicians relied on personal contacts and helping people personally, and the big policy issues weren't being addressed. And he's well known for working to address the really big policy issues. And that's where we are now. We need big politicians to address the big policy issues to get back to the dynamism and the momentum that we had in the 70s and 80s and 90s when we were addressing problems that were no more profound than those that we have now.
Okay, 18. Thank you, Ewan. 18 minutes to one. Bonzo, you're live with Chris Thomas.
And I just get Bonzo just to give you to help me.
And hello there, Chris.
Hello, Bonzo. How are you?
A bit toothache, I'm afraid. yes, the tooth fairy decided to bring me for my birthday some toothache, very annoyingly. But thankfully, somebody else also decided to give me some very nice single malt mouthwash. So
Good. That's
helping with the pain. You were suggesting earlier about having big enough politicians with big enough ideas to actually address the big issues. Well, of course, the problem with that is actually getting them voted in, because of the as you know, we're the only people, well, except the UK, of course, and Belarus, who use the first past the post electoral system. And that, and the structure of our constituencies, etc., leads to very much a sort of friends and families and mates down the pub sort of voting, electorate. And it means that people are sort of elected in without really that much of a grasp of issues, and as we know, many manifestos, yours is an exception, but many manifestos just some mom and bonag list of cliches which mostly they don't particularly understand. So I think one key problem, as we've seen in local elections and of course in national elections, is participation, and participation can only be increased to a reasonable level where that vote is actually really representative of what the population think, if their votes actually count. So I know we had an experiment with single transferable vote proportional representation in the 2001 election, I think it was. And what would be your views on that sort of electoral reform?
Well, the 2026 election will be for in 12 two-member constituencies on a first-past-the-post. You know, that might be my last election. Our problems are pressing so much that we need to win that election for big politicians, big policy, to address the real challenges that we've got. Electoral reform, you know, might be helpful. Having larger constituencies might be helpful. Chris Robertshaw's talking about more direct democracy through referenda these days. I think that Chris Robertshaw's initiative to work with others to have a website with policy agenda will be helpful, and it'll certainly stimulate responses from many people, probably me as well, because I don't think I'll agree completely with Chris Robertshaw about what his team propose. I do think it's up to the government to say clearly during the first half of 2026 what they've really achieved and what the Ireland Plan has really delivered, because what's happened in the last two general elections is that government and certainly certain members of government have drifted away. And where we are in this government, that's quite likely to happen, because the Chief Minister, Mr Cannon, is a prisoner in his own Council of Ministers. He doesn't agree with many of the policies that his ministers put forward. Moreover, strangely, the last few ministerial appointments he's made have been of people who didn't vote for him as Chief Minister. So he's made himself even more a prisoner in his own Council of Ministers. And to me, the government, who's left in the government before 2026, needs to say really openly and honestly what the Ireland Plan delivered and what it didn't deliver. And it's full of changes through the time. Most of the changes are for the worse. A few of them are for the better. It's good for Chris Robertshaw to critique it. It's good for government to defend itself. And I would like to work not as part of a party, but to make sure that the right policies and choices and costed options are on the table so that you have a real good election, like we did in Miles Walker's day, when people can make choices after the election. I do think it would be interesting to go back to what was there at the beginning of Miles Walker's time, whereby the House of Keys actually approved en masse the chairs of committees that were and executive committee members that were proposed to them. I do think that would be really helpful, because we do have a disconnect between the election and the formation of the government afterwards, and that's one approach that we can revisit, which is, I think, part of the Manx tradition.
OK. What would you like to see, Bonzo?
Well, I think it's not something to be put off until the next election. I think what we need is single transferable vote, proportional representation, and we need that in the current 12 constituency two-member system for the next election, and then for that to go into the local elections thereafter, and then that to be developed for and also for LegCo direct elections, and then in the 2031 general election alongside the Keys election, a direct election for Chief Minister.
Do you think this follows from the fact that times are tough at the moment, and when the financial tide goes out, things get noticed? I mean, when the revenues were roaring 20 years ago, nobody bothered about political process, really, did they? Is it purely because times are tough?
Well, some of it's to do with money, and I think some of it was to do in the early 2000s with whoever you vote for, the government still gets in. And that is indeed the same problem. And it's continued ever since my return to the island, 25 years ago. That was going on beyond that. So I think to hark back to Miles Walker as some kind of golden age, I think is also getting out the rose-tinted glasses somewhat.
But can I come in and respond, please, Andy? So, you know, the public expects us now to focus on what's not working inside the island, which is Nobles Hospital to an extent, and healthcare more generally. It's not working in terms of taxes and public finances and expenditure. It's not working in terms of the economy. That's what the public wants for this election. They don't want us, pontificating about how we organise the constituencies. For a start, the electoral law requires us to have an electoral commission. The first step would be to have one of those to consider some of the ideas you've had. I think we had a proportional representation slightly further back than you remember. I could stand to be corrected. I've got a referendum bill myself, which could be helpful in the future. But I do think we need to be seen if we're going to regain trust, to be tackling the real challenges and managing public finances properly rather than electoral reform.
Just just to correct you on that, I was not suggesting that the two member constituencies and the arrangements of 12 of them should be done away with now. I was suggesting that STV should be brought into those constituencies at the next, as it was in, as I say, I think it was 2001.
Okay.
You know, it's not impossible to do, and until we can have an electorate that knows it can have choice, which can then actually make change instead of the government getting in yet again and spending another 4 years wondering what the heck it's going to do, and then spend the last year making excuses about the fact that they weren't able to do anything for the previous 4 years. Now, that's the only way, I think, that confidence is going to continue to be held in the island.
Okay.
And I think we're seeing, you know, we're seeing with companies and individuals that confidence in the island is ebbing away.
Okay, we appreciate it. Thanks for calling today, Bonzo.
Okay, then. Thanks.
All right,
bye.
9 minutes before one. We're running out of time, but I must tell you a note of public information here. There are two seagulls bombing people in Christian Street in Ramsey. So watch out, anybody who has a dog, watch out for the aggressive seagulls. This is the Isle of Man for you. So do watch out, the aggressive seagulls in Christian Street in Ramsey. In just a few moments' time, taxis on the Isle of Man with Chris Thomas is on.
The Ginger Hall has it all. A fantastic pub with brilliant new restaurant and new menu, plus daily chef specials and more, including takeaway breakfasts. The Ginger Hall restaurant is open Wednesday to Friday from 5, Saturday from noon, and for Sunday lunch, 12 till 4, with the pub open from 4 p.m. daily. Booking is recommended, so check us out on Facebook and send us a message to reserve your place. The Ginger Hall Pub and Restaurant, Ballymanock Road, Sulby. The Ginger Hall has it all.
Concerned about your hearing? Get the support and help that you need with an expert hearing assessment free of charge at Island Hearing in Port Erin or Ramsey. With microsuction wax removal available in our Port Erin clinic, Island Hearing have been your local hearing care specialists for over 15 years. So for friendly, professional help and advice, just call 830 722 or visit Island Hearing at 1 Station Road, Port Erin. Island Hearing, always listening.
Get your tickets now for this season's range of onboard dining events featuring old favourites like the legendary Pie and Mash Train, the Curry Club and more, including memorable dining experiences on one of our Steam theme events with something for everyone. To find out what's cooking on the dining car or to book, call 697 457 or visit rail.im.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Chris Thomas, Douglas Central MHK, is with us today. Earlier on this week, Mike and Barry were talking about the situation regarding taxes, and I know that's something you've looked at as well. So could you just, you know the difference, and for new readers, start here, the difference between private hire and ply for hire. Yeah.
So we have quite a lot of legislation about ply for hire taxes, but the number of ply for hire taxes has gone down in the last 20 years. Private hire, which originally was things like funeral vehicles, wedding vehicles, minibuses, those sorts of things, has gone up. Moreover, in the ply for hire back in 2001, pending some work that hasn't as yet happened, we had districts in the Isle of Man, but more and more of the ply for hire taxes have got more than one district on them. So I think what I heard, because I listened to Mike's interview, what I heard from Mike, the union branch representative, I think, was that taxis didn't have the priority in the political discussion that they should have, and I agree with him. I've got a question down in a few weeks' time asking what plans there are to review the way that we handle passenger transport licensing, because not only are there issues with taxis, there are also issues with the way we license buses and license bus routes. So I've got a question down to say whether anybody is actually looking at taxis and buses, and if not, I guess Mike's right, it's just not been a priority.
Apply for hire means just that. You can drive along and people can wave you down, is that it?
That's it. So private hire, you have to go through a phone operator. And so obviously people know that there are all sorts of innovations going on around the island. It's about time. And essentially we have more or less got movements towards all island taxis, because more and more of the apply for hires are licensed to operate in different parts of the island. We've also got, what Mike said, only one profitable route for people to wait for rides, and there's lots of trauma around how that's used. So the basic point I heard was we do need to look again at taxi law and taxi
practice. Why do you think some people in government would have a downer on taxi drivers?
I don't think they have a downer on it. It's just that I think it's difficult. I mean, go around the world, the taxi trade is always a difficult trade. And you know, people, when they perceive they pay a lot of money for taxes, as taxi drivers are often in the same category as lawyers and politicians in terms of public distrust and the like. So we've got to get over that. Another point that was made to me recently, which is very true, is we don't have very much signage and discs knowledge about the private hire vehicles when we get in them, and that needs to be addressed as well. And I think the RTLC will probably agree with that. So in summary, we need to have attention on transport, and the taxi trade is an important part of that, alongside buses and active travel and highways and where you can park and all of those other things. It's such a pity we didn't have more time to talk about.
What I can ask you, Chris Thomas, is that the Keys election is on Thursday, the 24th of September 2026. Voting booths will be open from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m. Will you be standing, Chris Thomas?
I hope so, unless something bad, unforeseen happens to me. I hope to be standing, and I'm hoping to be making this case for a better formation of government and real options and choices that we get a clear steer from the public about in terms of energy, transport, housing, the economy, public finances more generally.
OK. If between now and then you were offered a ministerial role, what would you say?
I mean, I accepted a departmental role, and I can't see myself joining the current council ministers team. I can't even see myself being invited.
Thanks for being with us today, Chris Thomas. Do come back soon.
Thank you very much indeed for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Okay. Thanks to Chris Thomas today. We're open line all next week. A week on Monday, David Ashford, MHK, Chair of Housing and Communities, will be here alongside Councillor Peter Washington, the Chair of Housing at Douglas City Council. And later on that week, on Wednesday the 25th, the Manx Care Chief Executive, Theresa Cope, will be on Man in Line. So if you want to get a question in for any of those, email maninline@manxradio.com or call the answer phone on 682-631. Thanks to Alex on the phones. Have a great weekend.
WINT